Fourth down and 9. Chiefs at their own 40, down 24-17. 1:29 to go in the game. Mahomes out of the shotgun. Where to his right? Mahomes holding into the pocket, scrambling to the right side. Still scrambling. Now he throws it late. He's throwing for Tyreek Hill. He's got the catch. He's at the 20. Now inside the 15 and out of bounds. Down at the Raven 12. Unreal. Mahomes scrambling to the right side and threw across his body on fourth down and 9 for 48 yards.
Chiefs get the W yesterday, and that was the play of the day that saved things for the Chiefs, although this was also an important play to tie the ball game.
24-17 Ravens, 57 seconds remaining in the game in regulation. They will spread it out. 3-by-2, now 3-by-1 as Williams comes into the backfield. Fourth down and 3 for the Chiefs at the Raven 5, down by 7. Blitz, Mahomes, hot read, right side, goes to Damian Williams, touchdown! Right side, touchdown, Kansas City! And the injury to Jackson Griffin has fourth down and 22. The Chiefs hold, they win. 27-24 Chiefs in the OT. 1:39 to go. Fourth and 22. Chiefs with pressure on Robert Griffin III. He throws it up for grabs. It's incomplete. Knocked away. Incomplete. The Ravens want a penalty. They will not get it. And the Chiefs have won in overtime.
Chiefs win 27-24. I nailed the score on my prediction. 27-24. That's what I said on Friday. Go back and play it. Oh, yeah.
I had to play the other part.
I had the Ravens winning 27-24. I looked pretty smart until Mahomes pulled one out of the hat yesterday. Listen, this was a game I was highly concerned with, and I didn't think it. You know, it's amazing. I was listening to the TV broadcast crew, and Nance and Romo, I think, are pretty good. I really do. Romo, I think, is even better this year than last year.
Yeah.
And I learn things when I listen to him. And, you know, he's trying to figure out what plays they're going to run, what he would do. I love it. I do. I love that part. It's a lot better than Dan Fouts rambling and making no sense whatsoever.
He reads blitzes better as a commentator than he did as an quarterback, I think.
Maybe so. Well, you're up high. You got a better
exactly.
view, let's be honest.
Exactly.
And so I enjoyed Nance and Romo. I think they're some of the best in the business. But they talked about how, you know, this was like going to be a big upset or something. To me, it wasn't a big upset at all. I mean, you know, the Ravens have been rolling.
Right,
their strengths are the Chiefs' weaknesses. This is why I picked the Ravens to win, is the Ravens were going to run the ball, and they ran it right down the Chiefs' throat at 7 minute, 15-second possession, all runs on one possession, and scored a touchdown. If the Ravens had just a more experienced quarterback but still had was able to move around in the pocket, like a Michael Vick, let's say, when he still was – pretty good. Chiefs don't win that game yesterday.
Yeah.
So the youth of Jackson hurt them at times, although he didn't throw the ball that badly. But this was it was exactly what I thought it would be. The Ravens are going to control the clock. They're going to limit possessions. They're going to hold the Chiefs to under their scoring average for the year, and they're going to have a chance to win the ball game at Arrowhead. And they're up 24-17, fourth down and 9. If Alex Smith is the quarterback of the Chiefs lose that game yesterday. And it's not even close.
Yeah.
But Mahomes makes an unbelievable play, as you heard. The 48-yard pass on 4th and 9, he's rolling right. Every time he rolls right, I feel like good things are going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And he rolled right, and he threw it across the field, which is usually a big no-no. But with Mahomes, he gets away with it most of the time. He did throw a horrible pick earlier in the game did not get away with. And I'm okay with that. I can live with that if he can make plays like he did there on 4th and 9. And we've talked about the Chiefs over and over about why they're so dangerous in the playoffs. And then we talk about, I think Chiefs fans are a little bit pessimistic every once in a while, including myself, because of how bad the defense can play at times. But we've talked about it before on this show that you have something that other teams don't. And for the first time in years, the Chiefs have something that other teams don't. And that's Patrick Mahomes.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no game the Chiefs are out of because Patrick Mahomes can bring them back from the dead. There is no play where to be 3rd and 19, he makes a 21-yard pass to Tyreek Hill. 4th down and 9. You know, they had two penalties on that drive. I mean, the Marcus Robinson was going to be in the doghouse. He lined up wrong, didn't cover up the tight end, and then he moved, false start. So you had a 4th and 9, and the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes somehow, some way, are able to overcome penalties. Doesn't matter if it's 3rd and 15. When the game's on the line, they usually can make a play. Not always, but usually. So penalty is no big deal. Oh, hey, our left guard gets hurt. Big deal. Put Jeff Allen in. We'll be fine. Hey, our center gets hurt. Big deal. Let's put Austin Ryder in. We'll be fine for three games without Mitch Morse. Hey, Kareem Hunt got kicked off the team. I'll be all right. We got Spencer Ware. We've got Damian Williams. We'll piecemeal it together and maybe throw the ball a little bit more. Oh, Tyreek Hill's out for a few plays. That's all right. We got Travis Kelce. When you really think about how the Chiefs won that game yesterday, there is no other way to explain it other than number 15.
Oh, no.
Number 15 won that game yesterday. Number 15 is why the Chiefs are 11-2, and number 15 is why the Chiefs won yesterday, because any other year with any other Chiefs quarterback, the Chiefs do not win that game yesterday, and they don't win the game in Denver at Mile High. And I was talking to my 12-year-old son yesterday, and he brought up a good point. He said, I said, Alex Smith never makes that play on 4th-and-9. There's no way.
No.
Like, if it's 4th-and-4 and there's a 5-yard penalty with last year's Chiefs team, that's a killer.
They're going to get 7 yards too short of the stick on a little pass into the flat.
Or Alex Smith's going to run it and be short, or he's going to be sacked and he's going to panic. Yes, absolutely. So I told my son, I said, that's a play Alex Smith doesn't make. And then my son says, well, the Chiefs would be 7-5 if they had Alex Smith. And I said, you know what? I agree with you.
Yeah.
Because they don't win the game in Denver with Alex Smith. And they do not win the game yesterday with Alex Smith. That's at least two.
Yeah.
And I think there's another one. So probably 8-5, I guess, is what we'd say now since they won yesterday. But here's what's crazy. I was at Open Gym kind of being the adult in charge there for the kids shooting. So I was following on my phone. I had recorded the game on the DVR, and I couldn't resist. I had to follow it on my phone.
Yeah.
And then I went back and I watched it after I knew the result. And just watching it, just watching the updates on the phone play-by-play on Gamecast, I was about ready to pull my hair out, and I wasn't even watching the game. It was like, I was, oh, hey, they're going to win. Oh, God, no, they're not going to win. No, that's not good. Oh, no, that's not good. 4th-and-9, oh, God, that's not good. Oh, 48-yard pass to Hill. Well, that's good. Hey, hopefully the Chiefs can finish this. All right. All right, we tied the ball game. Oh, man. Well, the Ravens could go down and get a field goal. Hey, strip sack and fumble. All right, we're going to win this game. Oh, hey, let's settle for a 42, 43-yard field goal, not try to get any extra yards. As Tony Romo accurately pointed out, Andy Reid got conservative there, and this is what worries me in the playoffs. I mean, for the most part, Andy's been pretty aggressive this year. But there he should have tried to get some more yards because his kicker missed a 51-yarder on that same end of the field.
It drives me nuts. I'm like, you got a lot of time left
here.
You don't have to settle even for a field goal.
No.
If you got good plays, you know,
you
trust your quarterback, safe plays,
right.
You could score a touchdown and win this game in that amount of time with this offense.
That's the thing. If you've got if you got the best offense in football, which right now statistically the Chiefs do, and you got the best quarterback in football and the MVP, why are you settling for a 43-yard field goal? And I don't even know if you settle for a 32-yard field goal, because here's the thing. Butker's missed 4 extra points.
Yeah.
I know he'd only missed 1 field goal all year until yesterday we missed 2. And Juan's a 51-yarder. Okay, that could go a 50-50 split. But that's where it worries me about Andy Reid, is he rolls back in the old Andy Reid mentality.
Yeah.
And that's what he did yesterday. And he's not the only one. So many coaches settle for a field goal. And I get it. Andy Reid trusts his kicker, and I get it. If Harrison Butker kicks like he's supposed to, he's supposed to make that kick, okay? That's a kick you're supposed to make. He missed it. Now, if he makes it, everybody's not talking about Andy Reid being conservative there.
No, not at all.
So in fairness to Andy Reid, you know, Butker's got to do his job, and he missed a field goal. Now, he's been pretty good all year long, at least kicking field goals. He's missed a few extra points, and that's still a concern as well, getting into, you know, if you're Debbie Downer. Oh, we've had kicker problems in the playoffs before. That one might cost us, and Butker's starting to have a mental issue with kicks. Yeah, that's a little bit of concern. You're concerned about the rush defense. You're concerned about the defense as a whole. You're concerned about injuries and all that. And what about your running game with, you know, Kareem Hunt? You kind of got piecemeal it together. Yeah, there's concerns. But number 15 seems to overcome all of that. And that's how good he is. And right now he is the MVP of the league. And I love the line I saw somebody put. The Chiefs have something. Why is this year different? The Chiefs have something other teams don't, and that's number 15. Now, he's just got to stay healthy. Now, here's the thing I was talking about with the emotional roller coaster, because I was thinking it as I was following along on my phone. The Chiefs lose this game. And at that time, didn't know the Patriots were going to lose. The Patriots looked like they were going to win.
Yeah.
More on that later. I'm sitting here going, oh, my God. You lose this game. You get the Chargers coming in a short week. You're banged up. You lose that game. You're going to be the 5 seed.
Yeah.
You're going to be the 5 seed, and you're going to be on the road first round of the playoffs. And so in a span of 20 minutes, and Curtis Siebel, friend of mine from 810 WHB, I thought had a great tweet. He put out there, the Chiefs were looking at falling to the number 2 seed, and if they lose to the Chargers, possibly a 5 seed in the span of 6 days. Now they lead the other division leaders by 2 games with 3 to play and can clinch the AFC West with a win on Thursday. Huge flip in a matter of 20 minutes. That's right. because the Dolphins have the unbelievable lateral play to beat the Patriots. The Texans lose to the Colts. So you're sitting there going, well, you know, if the Chiefs do lose, we're okay. Those teams lost. No, you need to take advantage of this opportunity. And the Chiefs somehow found a way to win because of number 15. It was basically a perfect day for the Chiefs. But there for a while, you're thinking it was going to be a horrible day for the Chiefs. Down 24-17, fourth down and nine. And Mahomes makes a tremendous and just a fantastic play that nobody else in this league can make. And then, of course, the nice play call on the fourth and fourth and three at the five or something like that with Damian Williams. That was a nice design play. And Mahomes calmly sits in the pocket and throws that pass. And then when you miss the field goal, you're thinking the game's over, you're going to make the field goal. Then you miss the field goal. Now you're like, oh, God, we might lose the game. then you settle for a field goal because Mahomes.
Pray that you win the coin toss.
right. And then they drive right down the field, and they're in a great situation. And then Mahomes just drops the ball. He literally dropped the ball.
Oh, my heart was like, whoa.
I know. That's the emotional roller coaster I'm talking about. Because let me tell you something. The most overlooked play of that game yesterday, we can get caught up in Patrick Mahomes with the no-look pass, which was insane,
That is crazy insane.
He throws it left-handed, right-handed. Next time, he might throw one between his legs for a completion. I'm waiting for it. Behind the back, I don't know what he's going to do next. No-look pass, amazing. The sidewinder missile he threw to Ware right before halftime. Yeah. Right, the very next play was amazing. The fourth and nine, just astonishing. But the play of the game, honestly, if you really, really think about it, all those plays are important. And I know that Mahomes has to make all those plays to get us to this point. Okay, duly noted. But in overtime, Patrick Mahomes literally dropped the football without being hit, drops the ball. And the play of the game that is so overlooked is Eric Fisher did what a lineman's supposed to do. You never give up on the play, and when the ball's on the ground, you fall on it. You don't worry about the loss of yardage. Possession is paramount. You don't try to pick it up and be a hero and then turn around and run 30 yards for a touchdown. A big, heavy, overweight, fat lineman's not going to do that. Okay, some guys are fat, some guys aren't, okay? But Fisher, exactly, Cam Irving did it earlier this year, and it was a big no-no. No, you just fall on the football. And Fisher fell on the football, and that gave the Chiefs still the chance to kick the field goal that eventually won the football game. That is a play that is so overlooked, because if Mahomes, if that ball is recovered by Terrell Suggs, and he would have recovered it had Fisher not dove. He didn't just go down and fall on it. He dove on it. If Fisher doesn't hustle and make that play, the Chiefs, more than likely, it's either a tie or they lose, because they probably don't get the ball back another time in that overtime, when you have now 10-minute overtime, which I think is too short, but it's all about safety and this and that, so the NFL says. And the Chiefs were able to get the field goal by Butker, give him credit for bouncing back, and then they get the defensive stop. And by the way, that last possession for Baltimore in overtime, and Mitch Holthus hit the nail on the head. I heard him in a postgame on the radio. Justin Houston stepped up his game on that last drive. I mean, he was unblockable. They had to hold him twice, and that got him into the third and long and the fourth and long. And he was, of course, they should have won the game on the strip sack and fumble recovery by Houston. And I think everybody in that place thought the Chiefs had won the game on that recovery.
I thought they did.
But once again, if Andy Reid's not so conservative, maybe you get closer for a field goal or you score a touchdown. Another thing that Andy Reid made a big mistake on, and I'm nitpicking here, but I'm telling you, that still worries me going into the playoffs, is Andy Reid and some of his decisions. You had a third and one after you got in field goal range, and you declined it so you could pick up 5 yards and an automatic first down.
Yeah.
And once again, I'm going to go back to what I just said. The Chiefs are 7-for-7 on fourth down in short this year. They're 7-for-7. They are actually 8-for-8. They're perfect. They're perfect on fourth down and one. So you have the best offense in football, right?
Yeah.
But you settle for a 43-yard field goal. And you got a quarterback you supposedly trust and is MVP of the league probably. Okay, so the same argument applies. Why wouldn't you take the yardage and get in field goal range on third down and one? Don't you have faith in your offense to get 1 yard on two downs?
Yeah.
I know you don't have Hunt anymore, but can't you get 1 yard?
Spencer Ware can get a yard.
Well, sure. Well, Mahomes can. They can run the option. Anybody, they can run a shovel pass. They got all kinds of things in their hat. They got tons of plays they can do to get a yard. They can do a screen pass. They can do slants. They can do anything they want to do. The whole playbook is open with Patrick Mahomes. But it's third down and one. You take the play. You don't take the penalty. Now, if it didn't get him in field goal range, I would have maybe been okay with what Andy Reid did. But that you were in field goal range. You took yourself out of it by declining the penalty, and then you eventually ended up not getting a field goal attempt.
Yeah.
You have to punt the ball away. That was a poor decision by Andy Reid. I understand if your offense isn't that great and you don't have faith you can get third and one and then fourth and one, I get that. Although, if they didn't get it on third and one, they would have probably kicked the field goal and they'd have the lead.
Yeah.
So I don't understand what he was really doing there. I think that was the conservative, automatic coaches speak. Well, we want the downs instead of the yardage. No. When that offense is that good, take the yardage you already got, and you got third and one. Now, people could counter that argument and say, well, he thinks his offense is so good that he can give up 15 yards and we'll get it right back. Okay, I see that point a little bit. But when you're already in field goal range and you literally take yourself out of field goal range by accepting the penalty and not accepting the yardage you gained on a great pass again by Mahomes for 15 yards, that's a mistake. And it cost the Chiefs, and luckily it didn't cost them the game. So a couple decisions Andy Reid made yesterday in regards to field position could have cost the team the game and could have cost them number one seed in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Kill you in a game of teams evenly matched in the playoffs, whether it's Arrowhead or not.
Yeah. As you're going through that in your mind, that the play where they get the yards and have third and one or decline it or accept the penalty and just take the first down, it's like, you know, if this happens at midfield and you're only to the 40 or something like that with the pass play, then, yeah, take the 5 yards, take it to midfield, get the first down, and keep that drive going, you know. But
also think third and one.
Third and one.
If I got two downs, I'm going for it. If I don't get on third and short, I'm going for it on fourth and short.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I think that depends a lot on where you're at on the field no matter what there. And if you are already in field goal range, I didn't understand. I understood the thought process of getting the automatic first down, don't get me wrong.
Right.
But the thought process of taking about 13 yards of field position away from yourself, I didn't get that when you're in field goal range. And like I say, this offense can get a yard no matter where they're at on the field.
I call it a virtual automatic first down at third and one with this offense. Are you kidding me? Get two downs for 1 yard. Yeah, you know, Nance right away said that, you know, you take the first down. And Romo's like, I'm not so sure. And once Romo had some time to process, he's like, he brought it up a couple times. Well, they gave up 15 yards of field position.
Yeah.
He was right. Romo's good. He's a really good analyst. I think he's – last year everybody was all crazy about him. I'm like, he's okay. This year I think he's even better.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed the broadcast yesterday. The Chiefs pull one out of the fire. Now, there's still concerns. Obviously, the rush defense – you know they're going to run it, and they still run it down your throat. That's got to be a major concern. Supposedly, Eric Berry is going to come back for the Thursday night game against the Chargers, which is for the division title. Although, honestly, the Chiefs lose this game. They still, if they win their last two, they still win the division. They have the tiebreaker over the Chargers. And if they beat the Chargers, it's over pretty much because you would have a two-game lead with two to play, actually, and then it would be over, I think, because then – in regards to the division, because you would have the head-to-head. Sure. So you get the division. That doesn't mean you got the number one seed yet because you still have to win one more game.
Yeah.
Unless Houston and New England both lose again, which I guess it's possible. But it was a great day for the Chiefs. The only way it could have been better is if the Chargers would have lost to the Bengals, and they almost did. If the Bengals weren't dumb and go for two in the first half, 14-12, they go for two. Why? I don't know. They don't get the two. So then later in the game, it's 21 to, what was it? They were down two. It would have been down one had they kicked the extra point. They have to go for two again, and they don't get it. And they lose the game. Had you just kicked the extra points, you would have tied, and we would probably have been an overtime game. So, you know, I don't know how Marvin Lewis keeps his job in Cincinnati.
I have no idea. This is getting way longer than anybody normally would go. I would
never want a playoff game.
I don't get it.
I don't either. And after how he handled that yesterday, I mean, Chargers kind of sleptwalked through that game. They were looking ahead to the Chiefs, no question. The worry about the Charger game Thursday is the Chiefs got banged up quite a bit. Ravens was a physical game. The Chargers had an easier game against the Bengals, although it was close, but they kind of sleptwalked through it. I still think the Chiefs are going to find the way to beat the Chargers. I'll tell you right now, I think the Chiefs will beat the Chargers Thursday night, and you could very well see the Chargers come to Arrowhead in the division round of the playoffs.
Yeah.
And that would scare me. Then it might scare me.
Yeah.
Like, the Chargers are due to beat the Chiefs.
Yeah.
The Chargers are due to beat the Chiefs. I mean, the West is due to beat the Chiefs. Chiefs won, what, 20 the last 21 against the division, something crazy like that? Andy Reid owns the AFC West.
Yeah.
You have to give him credit for that. And so it's a huge game. And once again, it's unfortunate that the two best teams in the league now, one's going to be fighting for a one seed, and the other, the best thing to do is a five seed. That's the whole rewarding divisional winners. And so the two best teams in the AFC right now are in the same division.
Yeah.
So that is a bummer for the Chargers and Chiefs. But Chiefs get an Arrowhead. Chargers got the short week. They come across the country to play the Chiefs. So advantage KC. It's an Arrowhead. Hopefully Tyreek Hill will be okay and ready to go. I don't think Cam Irving will be back, but the Chiefs should be okay. I think the reason I feel pretty good about this matchup is, one, Rivers usually makes a mistake or two. Rivers isn't mobile to make plays usually, and Jackson was. You don't have to worry about him running.
Yeah, exactly.
You can keep him pocket, and then he's not mobile. And so Ford and Houston, the way they've been playing lately, I think they can get to the quarterback.
Chris Jones, man.
Chris
that
Jones, another sack.
Sack every game, man.
And he's Mr. Consistency. And then you've got Gordon's banged up. He may be back for San Diego, or for L.A. I want to say San Diego Chargers. And now the Eichler kid, who's a good running back, he's banged up. He may not be able to go on Thursday. So the Chargers could be a little shorthanded in the backfield. But this will be the first time the Chargers played the Chiefs last couple of years where the Chiefs don't have Kareem Hunt either. And Hunt has had quite a bit of success against the Chargers. So we got to keep that in mind as well. I think the Chiefs were going to win on Thursday. I was more worried about the Ravens game, but it is a short week. You never know what happens. But it was crazy. And I tell you what, if you... You know, I say it over and over. People are like, oh, you know, I'm not going to watch the NFL anymore because of this or because of that. You're watching. Come on. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. You're watching. If you're a football fan, you're watching. You can say you're not, but you are. And yesterday was a great day to watch football. Listen to these scores in these games. The Jets beat the Bills 27-23. Came down to the wire. Cleveland beat Carolina 26-20. Came down to the wire. Carolina's lost 5 in a row, by the way. They were 6-2. They're 6-7. Packers beat Atlanta. Atlanta has gone ahead and quit on the season. They didn't even give it a whirl. The Colts beat the Texans, ending the Texans' 9-game winning streak. That came down to the wire, 24-21. The Colts are now 7-6. Tennessee's 7-6. And, of course, Baltimore's 7-6. Chiefs edge Baltimore in overtime. Miami with the crazy last-second play to beat New England. Why Gronkowski is out there when Tannehill can't throw the ball that far for a Hail Mary. That was a big mistake by Belichick and his crew. Miami wins 34-33. Thank you, Dolphins. The Saints beat the Tampa Bay 28-14. The one blowout of the day was the Giants over the Redskins 40-16, but the Redskins are on their third-string quarterback who got benched right away. Here's a story for you. Mark Sanchez is so bad, and for some reason they picked him up, but nobody will pick up Kaepernick, who's definitely better than Sanchez.
Yeah.
Sanchez was god-awful. He got benched for a guy who hadn't played in 7 years they picked up off the street, and that guy went out and ran for 45 yards and threw for 180 in the second half. Of course, the game is out of hand, too.
Yeah.
Chargers squeaked by the Bengals 26-21. The Denver Broncos probably blew their playoff chances, losing at San Francisco 20-14. Can't explain that one.
No.
Detroit beat Arizona. And in another great game, Dallas winning overtime over Philadelphia on a deflected pass, 29-23. And then last night, Sunday Night Football, the Rams held to 6 points. Bears beat the Rams 15-6, and Oakland beat Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh's kicker on the last-second field goal to try to tie the game slipped and fell. And the Raiders win 24-21. I mean, there was upsets. There was close games. They're all coming down to the wire. There was overtime games. Back to the overtime rule, though. The NFL has shortened overtime from 15 minutes to 10. And I want to tell you something. There would have been a big outcry today had the Cowboys. Here's the situation. Dallas won the toss in overtime against the Eagles. The Cowboys then, there's a 10-minute overtime. The Cowboys had the ball all the way to the 2-minute warning. They had the ball at the Philadelphia 15-yard line, had a 3rd and 8. Okay, so they decide to pass the ball. And if it's incomplete, there's about 1:50 left for the Eagles. They only get 1:50 in overtime to get their first possession. They had a couple of timeouts because if you kick a field goal in the first possession, as we saw yesterday with the Chiefs, the game's not over. The other team gets possession. So now if the Cowboys complete a 3rd and 8 from the 15, and let's say you get down to the 5, now the Cowboys, all they got to do is milk the clock.
Yeah.
And they can kick a field goal, and the Eagles never get the football. The whole idea of overtime was that each team gets the football if you don't score a touchdown. In that situation, the Cowboys could have milked all 10 minutes off the clock. And we've seen many drives in the course of football history go 10 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
Not too many go 15 minutes.
No.
But 10 minutes, yes. Well, that defeats the purpose of overtime. We'll give each team a chance.
If
Dallas holds it for 10 minutes and kicks a last-second field goal, the Eagles never get the ball in overtime. Today, there would be a main story ESPN, CBS talking about overtime has to be revamped because 10 minutes is too short of an overtime. Plus, it adds to the chances of games ending in ties, which we've seen a couple of those this year. And I didn't like when they shortened overtime from 15 to 10. I understand why they did it, but I'm like, what's another 5 minutes?
I don't understand that. I thought of that. That went through my brain, actually, because I didn't care about the two overtime games that ended up in ties earlier this year because they didn't involve my team, you know. So it's like
you would have if you tied yesterday at Baltimore. But,
so then I'm sitting there when they're doing the coin toss and I'm thinking this is only a 10-minute overtime now. Mm-hmm. And then the white hat goes and says, you know, each team gets a chance here on offense and overtime. I'm like,
technically no.
What if the Chiefs get the ball here and use all 10 minutes and kick a field goal with 3 seconds left like they did in regulation, and they win it, and the game's over, isn't it? Like, that doesn't mean that both teams get a chance, do they? How can you give the other team a chance if this team runs the whole clock down?
It was much more plausible if the Ravens won the coin toss to milk the 10 minutes off,
yeah, exactly,
to be honest, than the Chiefs.
Yeah, and I didn't think that would happen with the Chiefs because of their offense and the way – honestly, I thought the Chiefs were going to go down and score a touchdown just the way it was going at the end. For their offense, but think how big that coin toss was. And I'm like, what if somebody ever wins this coin toss and then just runs the whole clock down? Uh-huh. I know you still have the 2 minute warning, but still you can use that to your advantage, whatever, run the clock down, and then you're kind of telling a lie at some point here before too long. Mm-hmm. I got a feeling
it's gonna happen.
Some team's gonna take that whole overtime and score at the end of it, and the other team's not gonna get a chance, even though they lost on a field goal, which you're not supposed to be able to do now based on the new rules.
Mark my words, it will happen. There'll be a team that's gonna milk all 10 minutes off and they're gonna kick a field goal to win the game, and the other team's not gonna be able to stop the clock, out of timeouts, whatever. And mark my words, it will become a controversy. It'll be, why is the overtime only 10 minutes? And it's be proactive, fans. You should already, in media, you should already be talking about it, just the fact that it almost happened yesterday.
Yeah.
Instead of waiting for it to happen. The NFL, I think, needs to readdress that. And I don't like the NFL overtime rules at all. Because, to me, I think it's dumb. If you go down and you kick a field goal, it used to be sudden death. Now it's not sudden death. So here's the thing. So you score a touchdown, the other team doesn't get a chance to match it. Well, wait a minute. The team went down and made a field goal. Why did they get to match a field goal but not a touchdown? I don't get that at all. Now, I understand they want to extend. They don't want the game to be extended too long. Well, if that's the case, then don't worry about the other team getting the ball if you make a field goal.
Yeah.
I mean, they're kind of like halfway into this situation. I'm telling you, just take the college football rules. I love overtime college football.
Yeah.
The only thing I'd change college football overtime, I'd back it up with midfield probably. So you have to at least get one or two first downs to get in field goal range. Instead, you're automatically in field goal range when you're at the 25. I'm okay with how college football does it. But pro football, I'd be perfectly okay with you go to the 50. You just start at the 50 and go from there.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that'll ever change. So wild and wacky Sunday in NFL. The Steelers lose. The Patriots lose. The Houston Texans lose. The Chiefs beat the Ravens. The only thing that didn't go the Chiefs' way, the Chargers, but the Chiefs can take care of the Chargers on Thursday night. Monday night football tonight, Minnesota is at Seattle. Seahawks are red hot. And by the way, the Ravens are only half game behind the Steelers. The Steelers might not even make the playoffs.
Yeah.
It's possible. Baltimore may actually win that division, get the 4 seed, and come to Kansas City for the divisional round.
Yeah.
And that's a team I don't want to
see. Well, you know what I was thinking yesterday during when Baltimore had the football in overtime? Like, the Chiefs are okay with a tie. They didn't want a loss.
Right.
I'm thinking the same thing for the Ravens, though, because they're like, I don't think the Ravens want to make a mistake here. They don't want to, like, try to get a field goal if they can and tie this thing, because they're still in better shape with a tie than a loss, too.
If they got a tie yesterday, they'd be tied with the Steelers, because the Steelers have a tie.
Exactly.
They're a half game out right now.
Yeah. So I was thinking that whole time they had the ball, I'm like, I don't think Lamar Jackson, this team, I don't think they're going to do anything crazy on this drive and try to score a touchdown and make a mistake, because they're better off with a tie than a loss, too. Yeah. So that was going through my mind. I'm like, do you play if you're John Harbaugh just to tie this game?
Yeah.
It's crazy to think that, but I don't think I think that might have been going through his mind.
I guarantee it was.
Yeah.
If you're a really good coach, just go tie. Don't lose it.
But then you got Houston, who was just unstoppable on the drive. Two holding calls ruined that idea.
Yeah, it did. It did. I tell you what, I thought the Ravens outplayed the Chiefs for three and a half quarters, and that's the thing that scares me if the Chiefs play the Ravens again. A team like the Ravens or the Seahawks is a team I don't want to play in the playoffs if I'm the Chiefs. Well, the only team in the AFC that plays, you know, Titans play like that a little bit, but I don't know. I think the Chiefs would be okay against a Titan team. But Denver, I know playing them a third time, that worries me a little bit, even though you know each other. I think the Chiefs would have too much offense in that situation. But Denver can shorten the game. Baltimore certainly is the team that worried me on Friday and going into this game, and I'd still be worried if I played them again in the playoffs. Everybody else, you know, I'm not as worried about the Steelers as I once was, just because they don't have Le'Veon Bell. Now they're banged up. there still would worry me coming to Arrowhead, but I think the Chiefs have enough firepower. Steelers don't have a great pass rush. Here's the thing. The Chiefs yesterday beat the best defense in football, didn't play their best game. Their starting running back with a shoulder injury had to leave the game. They had to have Darrell Williams had to make a catch in this game, for crying out loud, in crunch time. They lost their left guard. Tyreek Hill was banged up. The defense wasn't great. The offense didn't have the offense actually had more time of possession, believe it or not. But there's a spell in the second half where they barely had the football and had 35 yards of total offense in the second half until that final drive, by the way. So Baltimore had the perfect recipe to win, and yet the Chiefs found a way to win.
Yeah.
And that's what's encouraging. And you would think they can make a lot of adjustments if they play the Ravens a second time. But the next time you play the Ravens, it might be Joe Flacco at quarterback instead of Lamar Jackson. And so that could worry you because Flacco's a better passer, but he's not a threat to run the football, so maybe you're better off playing Flacco than Lamar Jackson if that's the matchup in the playoffs. So we shall see what happens, but that's the one team I don't want to see again.
I know. I don't want to be part of that,
defense. I'll take my chance against anybody else in AFC besides that team. Andy Reid on Mahomes' play yesterday, he was pretty impressed.
He had the one interception, but other than that, this was, I thought, his best game, just for a lot of reasons. But he really did a nice job. This defense was a huge, huge challenge. These son of a guns were really good and have a really good package, and they unloaded it at him, and he kept bringing it, and I'm proud of him for doing that. That's you can get a little defeated there. You get sacked hit, but he. No, he stayed right in there and kept firing.
After that fourth down nine play, they showed a shot of Andy Reid. It was that or one other pass that Mahomes made, and you just see Reid was in disbelief. He was like us fans, like, how the heck did he make that play? He's fun to watch, man. He is fun to watch.
I'm in my brain like somebody could put a highlight package together of Patrick Mahomes of only the plays that just only Patrick Mahomes could make in this league, it'd still be 10 minutes long.
Oh, like, at least.
It's like... Oh, my goodness.
You could just take it from one game sometimes.
Yeah.
Wow. Here's the thing that I was watching the game yesterday, and this crossed my mind, because I've been sitting here and I've been waiting for Mahomes to have a horrible game. You know, at some point he's going to have a bad game. Really, his bad game was in New England.
Yeah.
And really against the Rams.
Yeah, the Rams.
In both games, he threw for like 400 yards and four touchdowns, but he had a couple picks, or he got fumbled, returned for a touchdown, pick, returned for a touchdown against the Rams, and they still scored 51 in that game. They still scored 40 on the road at New England in that game. I mean, so even when they make mistakes, he usually can overcome it as long as they get enough possessions. And I'm sitting there, I'm watching, I'm going, oh, my God, this is a rookie quarterback. Technically, he's not a rookie because he was on the roster last year, okay? He's a second-year player, but he really is a rookie. He played one game last year. So I look at it as he's in his first year as a starting quarterback, and what he's doing is insane. He's only going to get better.
Yeah.
The more often he sees those disguised coverages yesterday, that Romo was right. There was one time where he totally didn't read the right coverage. He got sacked. Mahomes is so smart. And Andy Reid said it way back in training camp. He doesn't make the same mistake twice. He's going to pick up that blitz next time and have the protection in the right place. I mean, he studies. He works hard. He's a leader on this team, and the team is so behind him. And as Kelsey said, it's all about 1-5. And that's why it worries me if he ever has an injury, because he did have some injury problems at Texas Tech from time to time. But, man, if his kid stays healthy, this is why this year is different. Even with all the problems they have with injuries, problems with the defense, problems with penalties at wrong times, and maybe it'll come back and bite him in the playoffs, and maybe that's when Mahomes will have his worst game. But even if the Chiefs would lose early in the playoffs, I know people could say, well, it's same old Chiefs, and I understand it, but it isn't, because you got a guy that's going to be back for many years to come as long as he stays healthy. It's fun to watch, that's for sure. All right, local sports information?
All the scores from high school basketball this weekend can be found at ncksports.com. Again, congratulations to the St. John's Tipton girls, the Osborne boys. They were the champions at the preseason tournament over in Osborne this weekend. St. John's Tipton girls winning over Osborne 51-45, and the Osborne boys won 57-47 over St. John's Tipton. Thunder Ridge girls beat Lakeside 42-32. Thunder Ridge boys fall to Lakeside 49-23, the final in that one. Rock Hills boys went a second at the Cloud County Thunderbird Classic. Pike Valley boys fourth, Lincoln sixth. Lincoln Girls finished in second. Pike Valley Girls were fourth. And the Rock Hills Girls finished in fifth place. And then Smith Center competing at the Moore-Stevens Tournament in Russell. The girls took third with a win on Saturday. And the boys took fifth with a win as well there Saturday in Russell. So all those scores and information, if you're looking at records for your area teams, that's all at ncksports.com. Also some high school wrestling over the weekend and Friday as well. The Ellis Railer Round Robin, where the Beloit Trojans took first place as a team there. In Ellis Friday night, first place finishes individually from our area. Chance Bath of Lincoln at 138, Zane Colson of Beloit at 152, and Creighton Johnson of Beloit at 220. All took first place again. Beloit, the team champion in Ellis, and you can find results from Ellis round robin as well as the Minneapolis Invitational that Osmond was competing in on Saturday, and then the Manhattan Dual Tournament that Smith Center competed in. Went 0-5, but had some good finishes for some of their individual wrestlers. Again, all that information is at ncksports.com.
All right, college basketball over the weekend. KU escapes with a win over New Mexico State. Former Shocker assistant coach Chris Jans, head coach of New Mexico State with the Aggies. And I don't think there's any doubt that New Mexico State was a better team for almost the entire game. But Kansas found a way to win. That's a sign of a really good team when you find ways to win when you're not playing your best. Kansas is going to play a lot better this Saturday when Villanova comes to town. And trust me, KU is going to be jacked and geeked and ready for that game. The crowd's going to be nuts, and I think Kansas will find a way to win that game, even though they haven't been playing well the last couple of games. And KU wins 63-60. Dedrick Dawson came up big, scored the last 14 points of the game. Another double-double for him. Quentin Grimes struggled again offensively. Kansas, without Azubuike, you could see that they had a little bit of problems guarding the post inside. But when Kansas had a four-guard lineup, it wasn't that effective against New Mexico State. When they went back to two bigs and Lightfoot was on the floor along with Lawson, that's when Kansas did better. And that's the flexibility that Bill Self has at Kansas this year. He can go two bigs. He can go three guards. He can go four guards. I mean, he can do all kinds of things with what he's got. And even without Udoka, he still has a lot of flexibility. Here's Self on the win over New Mexico State. Jayhawks stay undefeated 8-0.
I thought they played harder. They're quicker than we are to start with. And then when you're quicker and you're a little bit more turned up, it obviously looks better. But I thought they played extremely well. I thought they played tough. You know, if you're going to give up 60 points, you should win the game, which we were fortunate we did. And so it wasn't our defense as much, although we certainly got exposed inside defensively. But I thought that they were a better team than us tonight. We were very fortunate to win.
They were, but when you're very fortunate to win, you'll take it.
It doesn't matter how, yep.
I mean, that's how it works in the NCAA tournament. You know, I mean, Kansas made it all the way to the national championship game against Kentucky. They won ugly every single game. Well, would you rather have lost pretty or win ugly every single time? It wasn't pretty, but they found a way to win every time. And that's a sign of a really good team and a tough team. And that's what Bill Self says every year, doesn't he? I don't know about our toughness. He questions toughness. And what he means is find ways to win games like that. This team is pretty tough. And I think this team, he's not been happy with some of the energy and attention to detail in practice. But these guys seem to be more geared towards game day, which some teams are just more like that. Game day, they flip a switch a little bit. Now, will Kansas be number one? Gonzaga lost to Tennessee.
I would think so.
God, wouldn't he? Yeah. So who's going to leapfrog them this time? Duke with one loss? I will say this. I don't think Kansas is the best team in the country.
No, I don't either.
I still think Duke is.
Yeah.
And I think Gonzaga, when they get Tilly back, their best scorer from last year back, I would actually say Gonzaga would be the best team. And then Duke 2 and Kansas 3 would probably be the way I'd rank it. Although, I think Michigan's better than Kansas right now, too. Michigan's had some great wins. But Kansas had a couple of really good wins, too.
Listen, these teams KU's playing, the names of the teams don't sound sexy.
New Mexico State's only one loss.
So good.
Wofford's good.
Yeah. The teams they're playing are solid. Oh, like every single one.
Their non-con's tough. They got Villanova coming up. I mean, Kansas, I'm not saying they're good. I mean, they're a top-five team, no question. I just, based on the eye test and what I've seen Michigan play. I've seen Gonzaga play. I've seen Duke play. Tennessee, who just beat Gonzaga, and KU beat Tennessee, so you got to put KU ahead of Gonzaga. But Gonzaga's without their top scorer from last year, who will be back. KU and now without Udoka. I think right now I put Michigan Duke ahead of Kansas in regards to who I think's the better team. That doesn't mean, obviously, I'm not going to reward Duke with a loss. So if I had the top five, Kansas probably be number one.
Yeah.
Michigan be number two. Michigan be number two in my book.
Michigan undefeated?
Yes.
Okay.
Nevada is undefeated, and they're a really good team with about everybody back from last year, made the Sweet 16. They're going to move up in the top five this week. So, you know, there's some really good teams out there, but and you don't want to be peaking now anyway. But KU escapes with a win. Listen, we talked about it. We had Riley Gates on GoPowerGot.com. He's on with us every Tuesday. We talked about this before the basketball began for K-State. Is K-State really the 12th best team in the country when the rankings came out to start the year? Because this is a team that with everybody back, everybody's like, well, they got everybody back. And Seth Greenberg says they're a Final Four team, in his opinion. I haven't bought into that. And last year, we've said it before, they won with defense, gritty, tough, close wins. They got a great performance from Mike McGurl to beat Creighton. They get UMBC a 16th seed in the second round. They dig deep and beat a young Kentucky team, but to their credit, they won without Dean Wade, who only played a few minutes in that game. And then they lost to Loyola Chicago, a team that just was better that day, spread the floor and had more offensive capabilities. And they made the Elite Eight. And so there's been all the talk about the positives of K-State and why they're ranked so high. It's because they have everybody back from a team that made the Elite Eight. They also have everybody back from a team that was on the bubble when they began the Big 12 tournament. They're also everybody back from a team that lost 12 games last year. So which way do you want to play it? Well, I'll tell you right now, after watching them through every game they've played this year, and I know they won the Cancun Challenge, or not the Cancun Challenge, the Paradise Jam, the teams they played there weren't not great. Missouri without their best player with a torn ACL, yeah. Jontay Porter, he's out for the year. So the best team they had played this year was, until Marquette, was Missouri. Their non-con games at home, they have not been impressive at all. And they go to Marquette and get punked. And you can get mad about the officiating, getting foul trouble, that part of the game. That exposes K-State's lack of depth, let's be honest.
Yeah.
That's a big fall off from Dean Wade to Levi Stockard. When Wade's aggressive, more on that in a moment. And we talked about it last week, and you and I are in agreement. If K-State is a bona fide top 15 team, you go to Tulsa and you win comfortably. Or at least you find a way to win at the very least. And I watched this entire game. K-State and Tulsa set back offensive basketball about 25 years, if not longer. This was a hard game to watch. Both defenses were good. They weren't great. Both teams had shots. They missed them. Both teams had players that were passive. And we know who that is. We'll come up more in a moment with that. And I'm not surprised K-State lost this game.
Oh, no.
I'm not surprised they shot poorly again. And they get in foul trouble. They don't have a lot of depth on the bench. This K-State team, I put it on social media, overrated. Well, they won't be soon because they won't be ranked, I don't think. They were overrated. They were rated, and this is how you rank the top 25 before the season. You base it off of last year. If K-State had to play Virginia, more than likely they don't make it to the Elite Eight. Now, we don't know that. They might have beat Virginia. Who knows? They took advantage of what was in front of them. It's not their fault that UMBC beat Virginia. But it is a bit, it seems like, I'm not saying it is for sure. I'm just saying right now, if you stop the season right now, this would be a huge, horrible, disappointing season if the season ended today. And you would say, absolutely without a shadow of a doubt, that it was fool's gold, what they did last year, to be rated so high this year. Now, the good news is plenty of time to change that narrative. Plenty of time. And this is my feeling about K-State. They're in a situation they haven't been in a long time, and that is, one, they're the hunted. We said this before the season. How are they going to handle being one of the favorites in the Big 12? How are they going to handle being a top 25 team and getting everybody's best shot? How are they going to handle the regular season knowing that the caveat at the end, they could go undefeated. It doesn't mean anything because you got to do it in March. Kansas knows that as well as anybody. You've got to – Kentucky went 40-0 a few years ago and lost in the semifinals. That's how they're remembered. So it's not about your regular season. It's about getting in the dance and what you do. And last year's a great case in point. K-State was – were they the 8 or the 9 seed? They played Creighton. Were they 8 or the 9?
Yeah, I think they were in the 9.
Okay. So K-State was an 8 or a 9 seed and went to the Elite Eight. They're judged based off of how far they went in the tournament, which was the Elite Eight. But we forget – they were an 8 or a 9 seed that was going to have to play a 1 in the second round, which means they didn't have a great year.
Yeah.
Now they have everybody back from that year that wasn't great, except they were good enough to win 3 games in the NCAA tournament to get to 25. I think it's human nature. that you made that run last year, and all you're focused on now as a K-State member of the team, your focus is March.
They were nine.
They're a nine seed. The focus is March. Your focus isn't winning the Big 12. Your focus isn't winning this next game. I think the focus is, oh, my God, we got to wait all the way to March so that we can get to the Final Four. Because it don't matter what you do, as long as you get in the tournament, as we saw last year, it doesn't matter what you do. As long as you get into the NCAA tournament, then it's a matter of winning four games. And if you win four games, you're in the Final Four. And I do think it's human nature for a team that not used to being there, went to the Elite Eight last year, they're like, oh, my God, we went to the Elite Eight and Dean Wade was hurt. We got everybody coming back.
Yeah.
Oh, we got Kennesaw State, and we got this, and we got Lehigh, and we got this, and we got this. Okay, Marquette, Tulsa, yeah, you know, we're going to be up because they beat us last year. Big 12 will get souped up ready for that. But we're good enough to we're not going to be on the bubble this year because we got everybody back, the Mandy Elite Eight. And it's not about what we do now. It's about what we do in March. And it's true. I mean, K-State fans suddenly were all about loving Bruce Weber once they made the Elite Eight. In some cases, they didn't care who they beat to get there because they made the Elite Eight. But if K-State loses to Creighton first round last year, everybody's saying, fire Bruce Weber.
Oh, yeah.
So because you won a couple of games in the tournament, everything changes, and now you're a top 15 team coming into this year. But if you lose to Virginia second round or you lose to Creighton first round last year, you're not a top 15 team this year. And people are asking for Bruce Weber to step aside and find a new coach. That's how the margins of error and how things change so quickly because you win two, three games in the NCAA tournament changes the whole thinking about what your season was.
Yeah.
It wasn't a great season, okay? Last year, K-State, it was not a great season. It was a great run in
great
the tournament.
Yeah.
There's a difference.
Yeah.
And I think K-State players and others close to the program are just like, can we just fast forward to March so we can just go for it again? And I think that happens to a lot of people. I think you see it in the NBA all the time. You know, the Cavs, the Warriors, when they've been good, they kind of sleepwalk through some games.
Warriors sleepwalked through the entire season last year.
Yeah.
Draymond Green admitted that earlier in preseason this year. Like, we didn't even care. We knew we were going to get there, and we'll just flip the switch.
We don't care if we have home court advantage because we're that good.
Yeah.
November, December, we ain't getting up for games like that. There might be a game here and there, but it's all about June.
Yeah.
And I think it's the same way. Even in baseball, you see it. Where a team wins the World Series or gets the World Series, they have a hangover that lasts a couple months, and they try to turn around. It happened to the Dodgers this year. They were nine games under 500 this year. And then they figured it out and turned it around. Like, oh, God, you know, we really do need to kick it in gear. It might be too late. I think it's human nature to rest. I don't want to say rest on your laurels, but it takes so much time to get back to March.
Yeah.
And I think as soon as K-State lost that game in Loyola Chicago last year, the focus was, wow, we had a great run, but we're going to have Dean back next year, healthy. Now we can make the Final Four, and that seems to be the bigger focus. Am I wrong?
No, and it's obviously the focus in the wrong places, too, because you remember the beginning of the season when K-State came out ranked number 12, and Bruce Weber literally was whining to the media because his team wasn't in the top 10.
Yes.
He did that.
Which was
he
silly.
Said, I don't know what we got to do. We got everybody coming back, blah, 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 blah.
He's worried about All-American status for Dean Wade.
And, dude,
just go
play. Lost 12 games last year.
Yes.
You weren't that great. Like you just said earlier, you're a bubble team going into the Big 12 tournament, okay?
Tied for fourth in a conference.
Do all the real research and understand your own team here. And 12 was pretty generous, I thought.
Oh,
when they came out ranked number 12, I was like, that's the cap for me. Like, they're not a top 10 team.
Yeah.
And legitimately, I think you can look at everything they did and see who they've got coming back. And it's easy to say, yeah, they're a top 25 team to start the season. Not a top 15 team. Not a top 10 team or even close to it. Okay, how many teams got beat out before the Elite Eight that were better than K-State last year and have everybody back or have a recruiting class like Kentucky does coming in, who they beat in the Sweet 16.
Who brought Reed Travis in, a graduate transfer to Stanford.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's just like think about all those other teams that had that, you know, that annual somebody gets beat early in this tournament that's really, really good that had a chance to win the whole thing and all the stuff they've got coming, all the kids and players they've got coming back. And then – get back to me on all this because I never bought for 1 second that K-State was the 12th best team in the country when that came out to start the season. And obviously they're proving it right now. Luckily, I was working on Saturday.
Yeah.
I forgot to set my DVR, so I didn't get to watch
Trust
it. There's
me.
No way I'm going to go try to find it to
Trust
watch
me,
it
you
now.
You don't want to watch it. Well, and I've kind of thought all along, and I haven't said it out loud because I'm like, I got to wait because there was a lot of talent that left the Big 12 last year. But people just immediately anointed K-State automatically about halfway through last year. Well, they're going to have everybody back. Even Brian Haney said it, the voice of the Jayhawks on our show. Well, K-State's going to be really good next year, and this is when he said it last year. And K-State's going to have everybody back, and they're going to be the top challenger of the KU. And it's like automatically anointed K-State as the top challenger and top contender. I'm going to tell you what. TCU's better than K-State right now. Texas Tech's better than K-State right now. Iowa State's better than K-State right now. Oklahoma's better than K-State right now. And you sit here and you think about it. If K-State's maybe the fourth or fifth best team in the Big 12, that means they're going to be about on the bubble again.
Right now, they're a bubble team again. They're the new net rankings.
This is a bad loss at Tulsa.
Not good for K-State.
It's a bad loss at Tulsa.
And it was bad before they played these games, and now they've lost both of them.
Now, to their credit, their non-cons have been strengthened a little bit. They went to Marquette and so forth and so on, but still. But here's the thing. K-State's never – this group of guys, not good against his own defense. And Tulsa did what? Matchup zone.
Yeah.
And K-State shot 30%. They were 5-19 from three. And if it wasn't for Xavier Sneed, they wouldn't have had a chance of winning this game. He was the only guy that can make shots. Barry Brown had another poor performance. Now, all the focus on Dean Wade, Barry Brown has not been good offensively the last three of four games. He has really struggled. And there is more pressure as your seniors. This is your last go-around, too. Isn't the automatic, we'll get him next year. But let's focus on Dean Wade. And Dean Wade, I've met him a few times. Great kid. Great kid. Great guy. And I really want him to be successful. And he is successful, but Steve Lapis was the color commentator on the CBS Sports Network. He's a former coach, and he said what everybody's thinking, and he was on it for a while. Wade didn't even look to shoot. There are times, and he does this. I saw it firsthand courtside against Lehigh. First half, he didn't even look to shoot. Second half, he's aggressive. He scores 21 points, and he's a leading scorer, and he looks like the, Big 12 Player of the Year.
Yeah.
It's like, how do you go from one half looking totally out of it and not wanting to shoot to being aggressive and looking like you can be? And he's a senior. He's not a freshman. He's not a sophomore anymore. So that excuse is out the window.
Yeah,
at Tulsa, he didn't look like he was engaged. He got two early fouls, which you can say, he never got into a rhythm because he's in foul trouble. I think that's a cop-out. Because you go in the halftime,
you're supposed
you
to
come
be the Big 12 Player of the Year.
That can't be an
that's
excuse.
That's no excuse.
No. If you're an All-American, as Bruce Weber says, that can't be used as an excuse.
No.
So the second half, he comes out, and he catches the ball in transition, wide open from the foul line circle, doesn't shoot it. Then he catches the ball in the post, and he doesn't even turn to look at the basket, kicks it right back out. There was no double team. It looked like he didn't want to shoot. It looked like he was scared to miss a shot. And how in the world Dean Wade can be scared to miss a shot right now is beyond me. And I understand he's an unselfish kid and this and that. His coaches have screamed at him and yelled at him and texted him and pleaded to him. His teammates, I saw Barry Brown on a conversation with him coming down the floor, like, I thought he was like, shoot the ball. His teammates are behind him. So if your teammates and your coaches are begging you to shoot the ball and they believe in you, how can you not go ahead and take these shots?
Yeah.
Unless you just don't have confidence. And he sometimes has, it's amazing with his talent, he sometimes lacks confidence. Bruce Weber's told that to me face to face. And you could tell Bruce Weber's kind of like, I don't know. There are no answers to bring it out of Dean Wade. I mean, he'll play great for a while. We've seen him play great against Kansas before. Does it have to be a great team for him to bring out his best? I don't know. We didn't see him in the NCAA tournament because he was hurt. But Tulsa, they needed him to step up. And with 2.5 minutes to play in this game, he was not in foul trouble anymore. He was scared to get a third, so then he was very passive. And he was on the bench with 2.5 minutes to go, not in foul trouble, and K-State had two or three offensive possessions, and Bruce Weber had him on the bench. He came back in with about 48 seconds to go. This team is going nowhere. This team is not going to the NCAA tournament without Dean Wade becoming aggressive. There is no way you can rely on Barry Brown, Kamau Stokes, and Jada to do all the scoring.
No.
Because Moween's not a scorer.
No.
Trice didn't even look to score. He's just a rebounder. He's like a Dennis Rodman. He don't want to shoot.
Yeah, he is.
And he can't shoot free throws. That's just like Dennis Rodman. So, in Stockard, a few couple decent post-up moves, that's about it. You're going to get nothing from your bench except from Jada. So unless Jada, Stokes, and Brown are going to shoot the lights out, that's the only way you're going to win games with Dean Wade continuing to play like he is. Dean Wade has to be better. Barry Brown has to be better. That's your two top scorers. Those two guys, as they go, this team goes. And right now, Barry Brown will still take the shots. At least he does that. Dean Wade shot five. Dean Wade took five shots in this game. Five shots in the game. One of five.
Made one.
two points. Your star player, your best player, your supposed All-American that you pleaded that you said he should be an All-American. He's getting respect, Big 12 preseason player of the year. If that's the and he's all Big 12 performer, you have to do more than that. Even you know, if he goes 1 for 16, I think K-State fans would be okay with that.
Oh, yeah.
K-State
yeah.
fans would be like, okay, he just had off night, but he was aggressive. If yeah. he's 3 for 15, you're cool with it. But 1 for 5 in this a close game, and Tulsa didn't have a guy to match up with him height-wise, really didn't.
Yeah, it's...
He was a no-show, man. I hate to be critical, but it is what it is,
no,
man. He was a total no-show.
I mean, you can't sugarcoat it when he's a senior. I
no,
mean, I...
You can't.
You know, we...
It's frustrating. And like, it is, trust me, it is for the coaches more than us.
I think at times you and maybe me a little bit less would come to his defense when he was a freshman and sophomore because he's
did.
A freshman. I know you did. And, mm-hmm. and that's why I'm bringing that up because this we're talking since he was a freshman where his veteran teammates were telling him he needed to shoot the ball more
mm-hmm.
as a freshman. And those are vets that have been on the team for a while.
Yeah.
Okay, so in the sophomore year, now you're getting to the senior year. This should be gone. Like,
oh.
if you're an All-American candidate, like you said, if you're Big 12 preseason player of the year, all this stuff that goes into that, this should be gone. The timidness for Dean Wade should be gone. You're not playing 2A basketball in high school anymore, okay?
No.
You're playing with the big boys right now. And what's aggravating is what you just said earlier. He's shown it at times.
Iowa
State.
He's
shown that aggressive. Yeah, Iowa State. Yeah, all my.
Insane.
I mean, they couldn't stop him
right.
that night. I mean, nope. They didn't have a chance against him, and he was yeah. aggressive, and he played the way he needed to play,
yeah.
and needs to play his entire career. Like, okay, so you get in foul trouble. Okay, you were aggressive. They're calling the game a little bit different. Just keep doing what you're doing. You don't change
no.
what you're doing because you got a little foul trouble early. And like I say, I mean, I get it. As a freshman coming from a 2A school to big-time Division I basketball.
But it's been 4 years.
But it's been 4 years, man. It's and like I say, I hate being critical of college athletes and things like that,
me
but
too.
It's time to step up for Dean Wade. The little grace period is well over for you. And if you want this team to be anywhere near a tournament team, no Dean Wade means no tournament and maybe no NIT. I mean,
well, it's no tournament for sure.
They can't win in the Big 12 without Dean Wade being aggressive.
That was a horrible game to watch. And yet they still had a chance to win it.
Yeah.
And Jada had a follow that he should have, I mean, I say should have made. There's congestion, but he had a good look. He didn't get fouled, and he just missed it. But there's where Dean Wade's got to pop up, get the ball, and go. And Dean Wade, I don't know if he even wanted the ball. He was really nowhere near the ball. And the fact that Bruce Weber sat on bench without foul trouble for a good 2 minutes there in the final 2.5, that tells you what Bruce Weber's thinking. How can I have him on the floor if he's not even going to do anything? It's very disappointing, and I hope for the sake of Dean Wade and his teammates, he figures it out because he has to, or this team is going to be a bubble team at best if he doesn't figure it out.
Yeah.
If he figures it out, then they can be what we talked about, maybe a top contender to KU. All right, Wichita State gets blown out 80-48 against Oklahoma. Listen, Oklahoma's better without Trae Young. They are.
Yeah.
And they, without one of their best players, McNeil kid, he was out with an injury. And our McNeese kid, I think it is. And Wichita State still got blown out by 32. That, after Wichita State was up 32 on Baylor.
Yeah.
Okie dokie. Speaking of Oklahoma, Kyler Murray winning the Heisman back-to-back for the Sooners.
The 2018 Heisman Trophy is awarded to Kyler Murray of Oklahoma University.
Kyler, what are you going to do with your new Heisman? Well, I'm going to put it on a shelf, and I'm going to go play baseball next year. And I don't blame him. He's going to make a lot of money playing baseball with the A's. Already got his money. It is weird that he's allowed to play. He gets my, I still don't get that whole part.
Yeah.
But anyway, he could come back for senior year and play at Oklahoma. He could go NFL. I'd like to see him in the NFL. I think now, today's NFL game, he could succeed. He reminds me of Russell Wilson, except he's faster. And I would almost argue he's got a better arm.
Oh, he's definitely got a better arm.
So I think, I don't know how if he's an inch or two shorter than Russell Wilson or about the same height, but I think Kyler Murray could do good things, really special things in NFL. You know, Baker Mayfield's a little undersized too, and he's doing good things with Cleveland, by the way. I'd love to see it, but it sounds like he's set on baseball, but that's pretty amazing. His second sport, he wins the Heisman.
Yeah.
How good's that guy? And A&M's going, how do we let Kyler Murray go? And how, Texas Tech. So we can't keep Baker. He goes, wins the Heisman, Oklahoma. Kyler, A&M can't keep around. He goes, Oklahoma, wins the Heisman. So who's the next transfer quarterback Oklahoma's going to get that somebody else doesn't want? Isn't that weird? All right, KU football recruiting. KU getting a couple of in-state recruits, Jaden Russell and Mason Fairchild. Fairchild from Andale and the other from, I believe, St. Thomas Aquinas. And that's a kid that K-State was really interested in. Iowa State, Duke, Boston College, and K-State were in on Jaden Russell. But Les Miles' first phone call when he became the head coach of the Kansas Jayhawks was to call Jaden Russell, St. Thomas Aquinas defensive back, and said, I want you to help us turn things around here at Kansas. You know what? That speaks volumes. When Les Miles calls you. Now, if Davey Beatty made that call, I don't think Jaden Russell's at KU.
No.
Charlie Weiss makes that call. Turner Gill, probably not. So right then and there, KU has beaten K-State out for one key in-state recruit. The other one, I don't know how hard K-State was going after the Fairchild kid from Andale. But there's, boom, KU won one right there. And they've got a coaching staff that they're starting to form. It looks like the defensive coordinator might be the guy that was at Colorado. They might name that today. The rumors are that's the case. And he did a pretty good job at Colorado last year. And all the while, K-State still hasn't found a new head football coach. We are now at December 10th, the early signing period. The first one is the 19th, 9 days away. Official signing period, the last one is in February. K-State seems to not be too worried about that. Lots of reports are that K-State's honing in on Kleiman, the coach from North Dakota State, which, by the way, they won easily to move on in the FCS playoffs. There was an interesting statistic Cole Manbeck put out on Twitter that showed the success of FCS coaches and then what they did when they became Division I coaches, and it's not good.
No.
It's really – like, they won – the coaches that he mentioned that situation – won like 85% of their games at FCS level and then went to Division I and they won 38% of their games. So that's not a good sign if you're K-State. Listen, I agree with Aaron, who sent some stuff the other day, and others, that Kleiman is not a sexy hire. But then again, as I said, there is no sexy hire now. There isn't. No. Unless Venables is going to change his mind
and
or something.
Yeah, for me, that's not what I'm looking at anymore. But there's still K-State fans, that those loud ones, you know, they're going to be saying that that's not what's going to, you know.
Troy Brown's been mentioned.
And things like that.
Is it Neil Brown or Troy Brown? Neil Brown?
Neil, yeah.
He's from Troy, right?
Yeah.
And then there's the Norville guy from Memphis, who, by the way, their defense is horrible. Memphis is. But their offense is really good. So, you know, I don't know about that guy. I don't know, something, I said this way back, that Gene Taylor would not get a guy from the Snyder coaching tree. He's going to go out on his own, he's going to pick his own guy. And I think one time we talked about how he might get a guy that you don't know much about, that might be completely off the radar. And I keep seeing all these reports by people following this thing that it looks like Kleiman was going to be the guy, that they're getting close and Kleiman's going to be the guy. Well, that's what everybody said about Luttrell.
Yeah.
And that's what many people even said before this thing even ran out, that Levitt was going to be the guy. These people have been following it closely, have been wrong every single time and every single turn. And I would not be shocked if they're wrong again.
Yeah.
And Gene Taylor's probably well aware of what's going on, and I don't think Gene Taylor's going to let that make his decision, but he's aware of the heat that he'll catch if he takes Kleiman. I don't think Gene Taylor.
It's gonna be him.
I don't either. I don't think it's Kleiman.
And I never have. Like,
right.
You know, everybody was up in arms about it. And I said that on Friday.
Yeah.
That this isn't going to be sexy. People aren't going to like it.
No.
It's not going to be good for his image, Gene Taylor. But I never thought it was actually going to happen.
I think it's not going to be Kleiman. I think it might be one of these two we just mentioned, Brown or Norville. But I think there's a guy out there that people don't even know about that he's talking to.
Yeah.
I really do. I don't know who that is, of course. If I did, I'd tell you. But I don't think he would. Juan, never thought he'd hire Levitt. Never thought Venables liked it, want the job. I thought Luttrell was the guy he was going to be able to get, but Luttrell decided no. But Kleiman's the next best option. Maybe it is the next best option, but I don't. I know Gene Taylor's his own guy. This takes some major kahunas to hire the guy he hired at North Dakota State.
Yeah.
And have him jump to a Power 5 gig and to follow up and to follow a legend.
Yeah.
Be one thing if K-State's been 2-10, 1-11 following, you know, Ron Prince.
Yeah.
This is different. So I don't think it's going to be Clemson. I really don't.
And that's what I was talking about on Friday. It's like Bull went to Wyoming from North Dakota State, not a Power 5.
No.
You know, there's not – how many of those guys that Cole Bambeck's talking about are going from FCS to Power 5? And I'll bet not – maybe one.
Still having
maybe
a lot of
two,
success.
I don't know. But and they're not having success in the lower level, lower tiers conferences of the FBS. So it's just – I wasn't saying anything about what it would look like for Gene Taylor as an individual. Mm-hmm. I was saying what it would look like for Kansas State and Gene Taylor as a school to make that hire. Mm-hmm. Is why I'm not a big fan of it. You know, it doesn't have anything to do with Gene Taylor's connections to North Dakota State for me not being a fan of it. Now, I know mm-hmm. that is the case for a lot of fans that aren't as well in the know and aren't following it as closely. But, it's just not a good – it's not the right fit, I don't think. Right now,
think about this for a second. Gene Taylor, and I saw this on social media, he made a comment and said the reason he left North Dakota State and went to be a deputy AD at Iowa was to have this, he needed a bridge
exactly
between FCS level to Division One, and he took that middle step and it's worked out for him.
Yeah,
why should Chris Klieman be able to skip that step?
Yeah, Chris Klieman should need to take that middle step, be the whatever his specialty is, defense or offensive coordinator at Iowa.
Which goes back
and
to
then be the head coach.
Exactly. So which goes back to the whole Sean Snyder thing. If Sean Snyder wanted to be head coach so badly and Bill wanted to be a head coach, Sean Leave. Should have left years ago and accomplished something on his own, whether he started FCS and then he went Division One or whatever it might have been. Maybe he went to a low D, maybe he went to UTEP, okay? And then he went to and did well at UTEP, and then he went to another job, did well, and then, hey, next step is handed off to Bill's son. But when you don't have, you're not even a D coordinator, offensive coordinator, I mean, not many head coaches get hired without being at least a coordinator.
Yeah.
I mean, or actual, the big coordinator, special teams coordinator, not usually happening. So you could say, really, you know, I've heard people compare, like, well, I'd rather have Sean Snyder or Chris Klieman. Well, why should Snyder have skipped all those steps? If you're all against Klieman and you say he needs to take a step, well, then Sean Snyder should have taken the step, too. Yeah. And now he's probably too old to do that step.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I'm struggling to see. I'm actually going to be interested to see what happens with Sean Snyder now.
Yeah.
Just if somebody will hire him on their staff. Hopefully not at K-State, because like I said, I think it's time for him to move on from that. But just to see if somebody will maybe he goes to UTEP with Dana. I don't know. Maybe somebody does hire him.
There is a belief out there that in order to get Bill Snyder to leave willingly, somewhat willingly, I say, that K-State, Gene Taylor, agreed to keep certain people on the staff of whoever the next head coach is. If Gene Taylor agreed to do that, He handcuffed himself.
Oh, without question.
And that would have been a bad move. I don't believe Gene Taylor did that.
No.
But if he did, then that could explain why he is having to go further down his list right now. Because I'm telling you, anybody that wants to get all mad about at Luttrell or any other coach that isn't willing to keep Colin Klein or Andre Coleman or Blake Seiler on staff or whoever it is that maybe has to stay on if there was an agreement between Bill Snyder and Gene Taylor saying, okay, I'm stepping away, Gene, I'll do this, but you got to make sure these guys of mine got a job on the next staff. Listen, there aren't many coaches that are going to come in and accept that.
Not like
a big time
guarantee.
Coach.
Now, some of these coaches will
Klieman
come in.
Might.
Yeah, some of these coaches might come in and you know, give them an audition and say,
right.
Hey,
they're not going to.
I'll
guarantee
bet you
it.
And see if you fit with our program, and if
right.
you do, then we'll keep you and retain you. But nobody's not ironclad. This guy's going to be on your staff whether you like it or not.
If you already are somewhere you're comfortable and you've got a great staff and you're looking at other opportunities like Seth Luttrell in this situation, and he goes and looks at Kansas State and they say, okay, you can have the job, but you have to keep these two guys on your staff in some capacity. If I'm Seth Luttrell, I say, listen, I'll interview him. I'll give him the chance,
yeah.
But I'm not guaranteeing Jack squat. And if they and Gene Taylor says, no, sorry, they have to be on your staff. That's right then I say I'm out.
Yeah.
Because it's just like if I go out and I buy another radio station, which I don't own one right now, but if I went out and bought a radio station and somebody says, well, you can buy it and this is how much I want for it, so I want my price, you're going to buy it, but I'm also going to dictate who you keep on staff. You know what I do? I say,
see ya.
See you later. No, thank you. Because if I'm going to take over a radio station and put my money and my hard work and my sweat and tears into it, I'm going to do it the way I want to do it, and I'm going to do it with the people I want to do it with. And if there's somebody on staff that on that station that maybe is somebody that's capable of being on my staff, I'll talk to them, I'll interview them, and I'll decide on my own if they're going to be on there, right? But I'm not going to automatically give them a job just because the previous owner or AD or coach says, well, you have to do this, or you that's part of the agreement. No, I'm out. I got a good job where I'm at. I work at my own radio station. I don't have to do that. I mean, anybody that wants to get criticized, set the trail. Well, why doesn't he go ahead and take – it's a better job. Even if he has to take on a couple K-State assistants, it's still a better job. No, same thing with Gene Taylor. Why would you want to make his own hire? Because you want to go down with your guys. Yeah. Same thing with Seth Luttrell. If he comes to K-State and he doesn't bring on a few guys he really wants and he has to accept Andre Coleman, Blake Seiler, whoever, and it doesn't work out, Seth Luttrell's going to second guess and go, what if I would have just done it my way with my guys? Yeah. I never really had a fair shot. I don't blame him at all. We don't know if that's true, though. That Gene Taylor. But if Gene Taylor did that, I'm disappointed in Gene Taylor.
Yeah, yeah. And I think part of that might have been a cover for what actually went down.
I think so, too.
But, you know, I don't know. I honestly, like I said last week, you have to be to the point now where you don't care because you got to move on.
Mm-hmm.
Seth Luttrell's not coming to K-State, so move on to them, whoever you think is the next guy up.
And the three names we mentioned, Neil Brown, Chris Klieman, and Mike Norvell, that's according to various reports, those are the three that are still in contention for the job. I'm telling you right now, there might be somebody out there that Gene Taylor is pretty good at keeping quiet that maybe people aren't aware of. I'm just saying that's a possibility.
Yeah.
Because everybody thought they had the scoop for a while now, and still K-State doesn't have a head coach. Reports were Luttrell was going to be introduced as the head coach last Monday.
It's been a week.
Still no new news.